Hello and welcome to the Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Troy Sinek, joined, as always, by the Libertarian himself, Professor Richard Epstein, Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, as well as Professor of Law at NYU and Senior Lecturer at the University of Chicago. Today, the ongoing impeachment saga. And Richard, we generally abjure chasing news cycles here on the Libertarian Podcast, but sometimes the outside world intervenes in such a way that it would be strange if we didn't discuss it. This is one such week where we are forced to revisit the controversy around the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. And first thing I have to get you to react to since our last show is the letter from the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, to Democratic leadership in the House explaining why the White House was not going to cooperate, indeed was going to prevent people from testifying before Congress. And the legal argument that this letter leads with is that this investigation is, to quote the letter, constitutionally invalid and violates basic due process rights and the separation of powers, close quote. So there's several components to this argument, but the main one in the letter is that the House has never actually taken a vote to initiate the impeachment process. This inquiry, in essence, just stems from a press conference that Nancy Pelosi held. How much power does that argument have, and how much does it really constrain the Democrats here?
Well, I think it's a powerful argument, but the problem about this is we're in such uncharted territory that people are going to always be able to dispute this. But one of the things that it's worthwhile doing is to think back to the way in which the Nixon impeachment went. First of all, in terms of building up the factual predicates of an impeachment prior to the time that the hearing was constituted, there was just an enormous amount of information about the cover-up that had taken place. And it seemed very, very clear that there was a bipartisan consensus that the president had done very serious actions to obstruct justice in his effort to basically protect his own hide. In this particular case, the impeachment is probably the third or fourth effort to go after President Trump. And this one is based upon, as best one could tell at the time it started, on the single July 25th transcript that took place between Zelensky and Trump, coupled with a whistleblower letter, which was done by an unidentified person and was double hearsay. We don't know who he was, and we do not know the people to whom he referred were either. So to begin this unilaterally on weak evidence is really to move very, very far. And my own view about impeachments is that when they're bipartisan, they can succeed. If they're single party situations, they ought to fail. That was the way in which the situation went with respect to Clinton. I would not have initiated an impeachment hearing at that particular time. I thought it was a mistake then, haven't changed my opinion in the 20 years since. But this one has all the wrong features. So it seems to me that the first thing you have to do is you have to be able to win over some of the Republicans. Now, in order to win over the Republicans, you have to produce something better than the hearsay letter and the transcript. You'll recall that when I talked about this on the last several times, I said you have to read all sorts of improper inferences into the letter in order to make it appear as though there was an explicit quid pro quo, I will give you military aid only if you trump up false evidence in order to make Joe Biden a weak candidate in the election. You can't see it on the face of the letter. There's then the hearsay element, which kind of points very strongly in that direction, but it's utterly uncorroborated. And one of the things that you know about hearsay, and this goes into the due process point that was raised by Cipollone in his particular letter, is that you have to be able to cross-examine the witnesses who are coming against you, and you're not able to do that in this case. Also, once the information is known about who that person is, you can then run an independent investigation to see whether or not his particular statement could be traced back to a partisan organization whose own credibility would be very, very weak. And if that's the case, then it further undermines this thing. Or it can trace you back to the people on whom he relied, and you can investigate them to see whether or not there was any slippage that had started to take place. So I think, in effect, that this particular point, generally speaking, the president does have an executive privilege. Generally, it certainly is going to cover various matters about foreign affairs. And so I think if you want to be able to run this as an impeachment inquiry, what you have to do is to get the vote from the House, which Pelosi will not do to get it. And once you do that, then you have to also be prepared to have the Republicans exercise the subpoena power. And for example, to go after Joe Biden. or Hunter Biden to see what it is that they were doing in these particular cases. It's also the case, if you're going to do this, you're going to go after Barack Obama. Now, why is that? Because if you listen to the boastful conversation that Biden made, in which he said, "You don't think that I'm playing hardball on my own? You call the president and you will find out that he's authorized everything that I've done." Well, that's not enough to convict President Obama of anything, but it is enough to say that you could then subpoena him to figure out exactly what he did under these circumstances. If it then leads to the DNC, you could start to impeach or to subpoena people there. And what you do is you get a real subpoena fest, and everybody's going to have to claim things. Interestingly enough, Trump may have some claim for executive privilege, but it's quite clear, at least with respect to some of these activities, that it may well be the case that President Obama does not. It's, again, very shadowy territory to know whether or not the executive privilege applies once the executive is out of office and cannot possibly, therefore, impede the way in which he discharges it. And the Cipollone letter did make it very clear that, look, the president's got a lot of other things to do with his time. You start throwing subpoenas around like this, and you completely throw a monkey wrench into the entire administration. You need something pretty strong to be able to do that. That cannot be said about a former president or a former vice president, even a presidential candidate or Hillary Clinton and so forth. So I think this thing has got a very, very long way to go. And what's going to happen is my first position is I don't think the Republicans have to answer anything until the Democrats reveal the source of the letter and the complaint. And if that's not done, then my attitude is, unless you've got something more than that, this is just a witch hunt. Once you do that, then you have to give us a decent interval to examine that. Is it possible that the Democrats could make out a case for impeachment? All I said is that the evidence that has been presented thus far is not credible, and I still hold to that opinion. The question is there some other stuff which is unambiguously points the same way? Is it something that Giuliani said that you could link back to the president? And the man is a, shall we say, a fountain of indiscretion in virtually everything that he does. And then it might want to change the overall situation. But at least as of yet, the Democrats have not coalesced around any additional statements that they're prepared to rely upon to not only supplement the hearsay report, but it has to replace it. That is, I think you have to give zero weight to double hearsay under these circumstances, particularly if the witness is available and the Democrats are trying to conceal him.
If the administration and Congress remain at loggerheads on this, how much judicial intervention should we anticipate? Are these cases where we can expect the courts to settle some of these disputes, or is this sufficiently political that they're more likely to just stay on the sidelines and let the two sides duke it out?
Well, remember, when the Nixon tapes were sought, they basically went to court to see if they can get a subpoena. And what they did is they examined the claims of executive privilege, to which they attracted a great deal of attention. And then they decided that the circumstances of the particular case overrode it. So there's nothing that anybody can do to prevent the courts from being sued. The question is then whether or not they would intervene. And I think the answer that we probably would see is, if you were trying to run this thing as an impeachment inquiry, it would take place outside the framework of the Article III courts. We know that the president, if impeached, is going to be subject to a trial by the Senate presided over by the Chief Justice. That's a kind of a signal which says anything that goes has to be answered in that body. Who knows what happens when somebody wants to resist a subpoena? This is all uncharted territory. Why is that? Because all the past impeachments went on essentially admitted evidence. So nobody on the Nixon side could deny what had happened. Nobody in Clinton case could do it. When Andrew Johnson was impeached, he had indeed fired the Secretary of War, which was thought to be a violation of the Tenures of Office Act, or whatever the statute was at the time. In this case, you got huge factual differences. And there is simply nothing about the way in which the impeachment is set up under the Constitution that accommodates a trial of fact before 100 senators under the Chief Justice. There is a precedent in a case called Nixon, not the President Nixon, but a Judge Nixon, where it was held by the Supreme Court that the Congress was in its right to basically not have the trial before the entire Senate, but to designate a subcommittee to look at it and then to transfer the entire record and whatever was there to the full Senate, which could then decide to supplement it if it so wanted. And they said that procedure is enough to handle this case because we have to have some deference. I think that decision is certainly going to be relevant here, so that if this thing is going to come, not even clear, does the House have to go to the Senate to get these things approved? Can it do it by itself? Can each party basically decide to veto the others? We don't know what this is looking about under these circumstances. But I would assume that if you really wanted to subpoena somebody and you sent it in, they're going to go to federal court. My guess is it would turn them back. What happens inside the House? Well, it would be simply intolerable if the Democrats decided that all their subpoenas were fully warranted and then by majority vote decided that none of the Republicans were warranted, which again points to the central point. The things about the Constitution is it is a bare skeleton outline. And if you were to look at the procedures for trial courts on evidence and appellate jurisdiction and so forth, we have entire civil codes that are devoted to the fine points. Everything has to be interpolated on this particular case. And it's a very dangerous precedent to want to do all those interpolations when, in fact, you have no basic agreement on how the procedure ought to work. As Karl Rove pointed out in his Wall Street Journal column today, when they decided to impeach Nixon, it turned out they were willing to let his lawyer be present at most of the kinds of critical situations that took place. And here, this entire thing is being done ex parte. So I think that what happens is that Cipollone is right to say, if you want to basically get into impeachment mode, you have to run the boat. And if you don't do that, then the question is, what's your power to oversee this? And his argument, which I think has some power, is normally you run your subpoenas in aid of a legislative function. Nobody here is thinking about legislation coming out of this situation. They're thinking about get the president. And in order to do that, you have to go the next step and have the impeachment vote. So I think the president's on pretty solid ground to say, I cannot cooperate with you if you're trying to get all the benefits of an impeachment trial without taking any of the burdens or political risk associated with that kind of operation. Having said that, after you turn this over and you try and basically go through all the maneuvers that each of these two parties is going to do, you realize that whenever there are fundamental factual disputes, you're at a very early point in completely unknown territory relative to every other impeachment trial that we've had in the United States.
To your point about unknown territory, a sampling of headlines over the last 24 hours in the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, Fox, Salon, you can find this in a bunch of other places too, reveals the same phrase being deployed over and over again, constitutional crisis. Is that a fair characterization of what's going on here? And if not, is there a way you could see this developing that would justify that characterization?
Well, I don't see this as a constitutional crisis in the sense that I don't see that anything has been shown about Trump at this particular point in time that merits that. You would get a constitutional crisis if it turned out that there was irrefutable evidence acknowledged by the president that prior to or after the phone call with Mr. Zelensky, he sat down with him and said, look, I'm in for a serious reelection. I'm willing to keep the United States security interests on second base. Either you come across and give me dirt on this guy, whether it's true or false, and then you'll get your aid. And if you don't do that, then frankly, I don't care whether your entire country goes down the drain. That's not a very enviable position to defend on a constitutional ground. And so, but we don't have that yet. So if that happened, then I would think what would really take place is we would not have a constitutional crisis in the sense that the basic structures would be essentially cracked. I think if it became that explicit that there was this kind of a quid pro quo, this kind of pressure, that then you would start to see Republicans peel off in both houses. And then what you would do is you would get a bipartisan move. And once that happens, what you do is you have a crisis of governance, but you don't have a crisis of constitution. Right now, it's not a crisis because I don't think it's gone to the point of immobilization. But it's very clear that the Democrats are trying to push the envelope. And it's very clear that the Republicans are fighting back. The letter that Cipollone wrote is not a crank letter. It's a very serious letter written by a very able guy. And one has to see some kind of a written refutation of it before you're going to go forward. And frankly, I do not know what that particular recitation will look like. In matters of this gravity, novelty is not a good thing, particularly if it's non-bipartisan. And all of the safeguards that were built into the Nixon impeachment hearing should be built in here. And why were they built in? Because I think everybody understood at the time, you want to impeach this guy, and then you want to convict him, and you use dicey proceedings. What's going to happen is this whole thing will be completely illegitimate. If you use proceedings that bend over backwards to accommodate the president, and then the evidence is so strong that he has no choice but to resign, you're going to avoid a constitutional crisis. And indeed, the only crisis that happened afterwards was the decision by Gerald Ford to pardon President Nixon on his own motion, I think, which may well have cost him the election with respect to Jimmy Carter in 1976. But I think at this point we don't have one. If what happens is the Democrats try to run a unilateral impeachment saying it's obstruction of justice for you to resist our subpoena and do that on their own unilateral judgment as to what is required, it's not going to happen. What would happen at the very least, I think, is their next maneuver, if they're serious, is they have to go into court, as we did in the first Nixon case, and claim we're entitled to all of these particular documents, then have the president defy a judicial subpoena or a subpoena which has been approved by the courts. At that point, if he did it, you would have some very serious problems, and you'd probably see the Republicans flipping over to the other side and forcing Trump's out. But that's not where we are yet. The first order of business that the Democrats have to do, if they want to make any of this stick, is they have to make public who it was that wrote that letter. And once they do that, the entire hearing is completely going to be transformed. If it can be shown that it was written by his lawyer, if it can be shown that Adam Schiff had something to do with it, if it can be shown that this guy was a chronic abuser of one kind or another, whoever it might have been, there are so many possibilities that could come up that this is the inference that I draw. There's a standard principle of discovery. If you're asked for medical records and you don't want to turn them over, we assume that whatever somebody charges against you was true, that you were sick of this particular thing. And so if you have this request and they insist now for weeks, right, keeping this stuff in the dark, the presumption is that you assume that you have a very bad witness. And there were rumors in the paper today that, the guy was really tied into Joe Biden. I have no idea whether it's true or not. But you can speculate all you want. What you need is not a speculation. You need a name. And so my basic position would be, I haven't seen the collateral evidence that would carry this thing over the top, but your fundamental case is still the letter on the one hand and the phone call on the other. They don't do it. If you want to make this thing go, you have to basically reveal who it is that wrote that letter and have him examined to see how it was that that letter came to be written. I don't think the Democrats actually want to go, so I don't think they're ever going to bring an impeachment inquiry or an impeachment charge formally. I think they're just going to try to keep the pot boiling. And since they did that with the Mueller report, there's going to be, I think, increasing public skepticism about the way in which this thing is being covered out. Now, who knows how this will play out? It's certain that there's a huge amount of public which just hates Donald Trump and will be happy to see him impeached. But I think that's not a referendum on the soundness of the impeachment policy. That's just a very strong vote by a large number of people who's saying, hey, we want to impeach him and then see him not convicted, or by people say we want him out of office no matter what. And we don't care what impeachment stands for. We just hate the man. And I think there's a lot of that out there as well, which I fully understand, but I don't think it condones what's going on.
All right. Thank you, Richard. And thank you to our listeners. Remember, you can follow Richard on Twitter at Richard A. Epstein. You can read his weekly column, The Libertarian, by visiting Defining Ideas at hoover.org. And you can help us out by rating the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. For Richard Epstein, I'm Troy Sinek. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been a production of the Hoover Institution. For more information about our work, please visit hoover.org.